Tim Coleman with us, director, producer of the Afterlife Investigations. We'll take your calls, questions, and stories when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tim, for you, when you put together the Afterlife Investigations, any specific area that just blew you away?
Completely. You know, I'd had an interest, obviously, in sort of paranormal phenomena prior to that, but it's once you sort of get into it, it is mind-blowing. I mean, the Skull Experiment, I've never come across anything like that. It's just so remarkable. We've only been able to touch on the tiniest part of it in this radio program. So I do urge people to look at the film because we do go into great detail in actually what happened. And it's an extraordinarily difficult film to make because the phenomenon is so out there. You know, it's from a journalistic standpoint, it's very difficult to convey that information in a sort of sober manner that people are going to be able to digest.
You know, earlier I was talking about how horrible some of these ghost television shows are right now. It's got to be, you know, where, you know, somebody touched me in the back, where they, you know, they have to come up with something. And, you know, you were videotaping and producing on events that were real, scientific.
Yeah. I mean, this is just drives me mad, these kind of shows. And then, you know, I've spoken to producers who work in that field. And, you know, a lot of that stuff is scripted. You know, it's entirely set up, entirely created to produce some sort of sensationalist entertainment. It has absolutely nothing to do with the paranormal. It's all fake. You know, if people want to get their entertainment that way, then fair enough. But, you know, if you want to see the real deal, then look at this film. You know, this is what's really going on. And unfortunately, that doesn't get half as much attention as all the fakery and hokery.
Tell me about Alison Dubois.
Well, as you all know out there, Alison Dubois is a remarkable medium. When we were, she's the real-life inspiration behind the hit TV show Medium. So her abilities are sort of fairly well-known because they've been dramatized so extensively. And she's produced a number of books, and she's working away doing her own stuff. When we met her, it was before she became famous. We went out to Gary Schwartz's lab in Arizona because he was testing a number of mediums. All of America's top mediums were sort of being tested by Gary at that time. And what happened was that essentially there were three main investigators in the Skull Experiment from the Society for Psychical Research. One of the key researchers was Montague Keen, who had been investigating the paranormal since the 1940s, a very erudite and intelligent gentleman. And he unfortunately died, as I mentioned. So one of Schwartz's mediums, Laurie Campbell, was actually picking up something from Montague Keen. Montague Keen was coming through that particular medium, mentioned this to Schwartz, and Schwartz decided that he wanted to do an experiment using Alison Dubois. So with Veronica Keen, who was Monty's widow, sitting by a telephone, as it were, live, she was a blind sitter because Dubois knew nothing about who she was trying to communicate with. She didn't have any information about Keen prior to the communication, and she didn't know that Veronica was sitting at the end of a telephone line sort of there during the session, but unbeknownst to her. So that was how the session was set up. And what happened was quite remarkable. I mean, the session went on for about an hour or so. Admittedly, she got a lot of things wrong. A lot of statements were very vague, but then she started to really nail it. I don't know if you've got the clip there, but...
No.
She essentially... What happened was that Monty died in a sort of large lecture hall during that... And that was actually videoed. So what I did is got permission from Veronica, the widow, to use this video because it's shot from the back of the auditorium, so you only kind of see his head, so it's done fairly tastefully. Even though you hear him as he's speaking, he loses, you know, the power of his speech, and, you know, that's kind of when he dies. And I wanted to illustrate the point that Dubois had very accurately described the situation of his death, where he was, and how this happened. So I intercut the two, and that proved to be very dramatic indeed. And you can see quite clearly how accurate her description of his death is.
Okay, well, let's take some phone calls. This hour is going to go by quickly. Dan's in San Diego. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, thank you so much, George.
Sure thing.
I really appreciate this. And I live in Pacific Beach here. I love it here. George, I'm just so fascinated with what you've been talking about, Tim. I had some experiences, but the first one and it was like this, Tim. I didn't know anything about the other side. I grew up as in a church, Catholic church. But at any rate, I was 19, and I had met a doctor and a lady, and she introduced me to the doctor. I was having some problems. But at any rate, he taught me how to do self-hypnosis, deep meditation, and it helped me instantly. And I proceeded with this, and one day I was in a back bedroom, and you get deeper and deeper, and suddenly I knew it was time to get up. And this is what it was like. It's exactly what you're talking about. I looked down, and there was my body. And I went, and you don't think, you just know. And I said things like in my head, you don't think, you just know. Was, boy, sure I'm glad to be out of that. It was true. Something like, I've been dragging that around for a long time this time or something. And in this room, I knew that there were certain things because I didn't know. I'd never heard of anything like this before. And in this master bedroom, it was my folks' bedroom, was a huge mirror and a dressing table in this huge master bedroom on a golf course. But anyway, I looked at myself. And it's exactly what you're saying. I looked exactly like I looked in my body at the same time. And I was made up of, like, light, but you could see every feature in you. Mm. And I did that because I wanted to prove this was happening. But, again, you don't think, you just know. You know, I knew I needed to do certain things. And the next thing I did, and you don't need to open up a door. You go right through these instantly. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't been upstairs where my younger brother and my folks were in hours and hours. I have no idea. I went up there, and they couldn't see me, but I could see them. And exactly, my mom was reading a book. My dad was asleep on a couch, and my brother was on a hearth reading a book. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I knew instantly it was time to go back. And this, and by the way, the lady that introduced me to the doctor, she told me about Edgar Casey. I laughed at her and stuff. I said, there's more people in the world now. But anyway, and other things happened, several other experiences, but exactly to the T of what you were saying. I'll take my questions off the line unless you want to ask me something. And I wanted to thank Will, by the way, George and Tim. And I'm having some difficulties right now. And I know you have a prayer line, so after we're done, if you could give me back what Will, I'll just explain.
I will
number, whatever it is.
Okay. Tim, I guess you see all kinds of things nowadays, don't you?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, George, because when people say, what do? You know, I make films. Okay, what have you done? Well, I've just made a film about the evidence for life after death. People come out with the most extraordinary stories. It's like they suddenly have permission to talk about something that is often quite a taboo subject, especially in England. I think in the States, people are much more open. But over here, you know, the paranormal is still a bit of a, you know, it's a major taboo. It's very difficult for people to talk about it without feeling, intimidated. It's the same with the UFO subject. It's a taboo subject. And so people come out with the most remarkable stories. You know, that guy's, you know, story about having an out-of-body experience is just, you know, one of many. I mean, I recently was on flying back from the States, and this guy was sitting next to me, and we had this conversation. He said, oh, wow, you know, my father recently passed, and he was a truck driver, and he was driving across the States, and he described to me how his father had suddenly appeared in the seat next to him, sort of materialized, so he could see him entirely in his, you know, as a body. He didn't say whether it was physical or not. And his father just smiled at him, you know, a lovely smile, and then bang, he was gone. You know, and this is a typical kind of thing where people, all they get is a sort of like, yes, I'm still continuing in spirit. I continue in another dimension. And it's kind of really what the conversation is about. You know, it's just to let people know they're still there.
Okay, next up, Henry in Baltimore, Maryland, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Henry.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
I have been involved in a group developing a radio to communicate with the other side. And at a point where we were just about there, jealousy or greed creeped into the group, and people separated to find the glory by themselves. I am desirous of this time being involved with someone else and with the group, and I don't have a computer set up. Can I get a phone number, please?
A phone number for what?
For the group that's working with the contact to the other side.
Well, there are no phone numbers.
Only the computer.
Only the computer, sir. That's the best bet. Nashville, Tennessee, David in Nashville. Go ahead, David.
Hey, how you doing? Great show tonight. I sort of have to agree with our first guest that was on. I'm a bit of a skeptic because I've never had anything happen to me. Nothing at all. I mean, even no matter what it is, I'd have to basically poke it with a stick to believe in it. And as was alluded to or mentioned in the first part of the broadcast, in this second half, there were schematics to this interdimensional communicator. Are those schematics available to us? I mean, could I go somewhere and look them up, download it, build it myself? Let me see if I can find some proof.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about that is that was a particular device. I mean, it's a remarkable story. As I mentioned earlier, the Skull people were getting images on film that was locked. It was locked in a box which was padlocked and held in the arms of the researchers. And, you know, there's no possibility of switching or fraud here. And when those films were processed, you know, had these remarkable images on them. And one of the images was a diagram. It's like a sort of drawing of the sort of circuit for how to create this device. And they called it the trans-dimensional communication device. And as you mentioned, it was signed TAC, which was Thomas Alva Edison. Now, the device, if you look at the Skull Experiment, or you buy the Skull Experiment book by Grant and James Solomon, you'll find a picture of it there. Now, you could recreate that device. It was recreated by Arthur Ellison, who's one of the researchers, who's an emeritus professor of electrical engineering. So he knew his stuff about electrical engineering, you know, how to build these devices. It was using germanium, which is a precursor to silicon. And lo and behold, it produced these remarkable results. Now, I can't say that if you built this device and you used it, you'd get any results, because these things tend to be connected to the person doing them. As I mentioned with Barchi, you can take his radio and somebody can use it, and you won't necessarily get any results. It's very much about whether, also in my view, whether spirit wants to communicate with you.
Fine.
Okay. There you go. Let's go to Sharon in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Sharon, it's your turn on Coast to Coast.
I was wondering what your belief is in life after, reincarnation.
Do I believe in reincarnation? Yes, I do.
Do you have any idea as the length of time after someone dies that they may come back? Is there a set time?
It could happen instantly, Sharon, based on the guests we've had on the program. Or it could take a long time in terms of what we perceive time to be.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't have to be immediate, but it can be.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. That's got to be another program for you one day, Tim. Reincarnation.
Well, I'm already doing it, George. That's exactly what I'm doing, and I basically have been up to Scotland filming a young kid who was about 5 at the time, who has a memory of a past life. As you know, children often spontaneously remember past life
memories.
Yeah,
they sure
do. They have very accurate memories.
And too many parents try to sweep it under the carpet.
Well, yeah, in this case, you know, the parents actually got divorced because the mother was supporting the child, saying, you know, this is really interesting, let's find out more. And the father said, this is just hooey, and, you know, gave them a very hard time.
Well, he sure did. Now, when you put together afterlife investigations, how long did it take you guys to do that?
Ages. We started in about 2006, and it took sort of. It is a long time, but then I was shooting 3 films successively, you know, because I said I was making the Skull Experiment, and then one on ITC, which is a second film, and then I was also doing another film, which is on out-of-body experience, near-death experience, mediumship, and reincarnation. That's the third film. So I've already shot most of those, and I just need to edit them. And I've done this, I must mention, a lot of it was done with Dan Drazen, who was my partner at the time. So we were collaborating on all that together.
Idaho Springs, it's first-time caller. Tiger's with us. Hi, Tiger.
Hey, how you doing, George? Hey, I'm a real close friend to Jose Escamilla, and this is the first time I've ever called the show, but I'm a theoretical physicist.
Okay.
And this guy's, your first guest was incredible. I actually...
The skeptic.
You know, he was on spot. The gentleman you have on here now is making one hell of a claim, and he keeps speaking about scientific, you know, energies and evidence, and I'm sorry, I've never heard of spiritual energy, and I've never heard of natural energy.
But you look at this as a scientist would, right?
Well, I look at it as a skeptic. I'm empirical. I want to see some real empirical evidence.
How do you approach a skeptic, Timothy?
Okay, so skepticism is healthy doubt, you know, and I encourage skepticism. I really like to debate with skeptics who are informed. I don't like knee-jerk skepticism, don't know anything about the subject. So to take your particular point of view, what we're talking about is the fundamental problem with these kind of issues is that, you know, scientists can't come in and measure the energy per se, because we're not talking about electromagnetic energy. We're talking about something that exists outside of that, those kind of energies. These aren't physical energies, these are spiritual energies, and this is a big problem. However, if you look at what went on, say, in the Skoll experiment, you'll find that three top-notch researchers, two of whom were scientists, actually investigated that. And those experiences were demonstrated to them over and over and over again. So they went in being healthy skeptics. They came out becoming completely convinced that what they were seeing was a genuinely paranormal event.
Yet I'm sure there's some people out there who are hucksters who could try to pull the wool over people's eyes. As you
sure. Well, we had, the Skoll experiment, James Webster, who was a member of the Magic Circle in Britain, who is a very experienced magician, attended a number of Skoll sessions, and he was allowed to inspect the seance room prior to that and post that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. They were completely open. James basically decided that there was no hokery going on. He couldn't find any. There weren't any devices hidden away and stuff like that. Controls. The scientists who investigated Skoll pressed very specific controls, as many as they could, once they were allowed into the seance room. So, you know, for instance, with the photographic experiments, as I mentioned, they came in with the film. It belonged to them. They put it in a box that was created by them and locked by them and put on the table with a sort of drawing that were drawn out around the outside of the edge. They were holding that box throughout the session, and yet it's still this film was exposed in a paranormal manner. Now, those controls, if you like, are scientific. That's an attempt to impose scientific controls on a paranormal event.
Tim, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be out of town tomorrow. John B. Wells gracious enough to sit and man the chair here. So he'll be doing Coast to Coast on Friday night into Saturday morning. So look forward to that. I will be back in a moment with Tim Coleman, and we'll take your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Tim Coleman with us. Tim, tell me about these objects, you call them apports, that are transported from one location to another by spirits.
Okay. So certainly at the Skoll experiment, what would happen was they'd be in their dark room in the seance, and essentially that cellar was in the basement. The door was locked. Nobody could get in. There were two, Sandra Foy and Robin Foy together with the two mediums. And in the middle of that sort of situation, the seance had lost maybe about 2 hours. Suddenly they would hear an object falling onto the table or onto the floor, and it made an enormous amount of noise. If you dropped a small object on the table, it would make a small amount of noise. But Robin described this as like a brick landing on the table, really, really loud.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, when the lights went on, it would be like a small object, like a coin or piece of jewelry or something like that. And as he explained, he believed that they were sort of gifts from the spirit world to people. And often they had great significance to the individual who was made, let's say there was a guest sitting in with them. Then it would be an object that would be sort of, it would trigger a memory of somebody who was dead or something, you know, something like that. Same thing happened at Barchi, that the women I interviewed there who this happened to, it was an object that immediately related to their deceased son. So they thought it was a gift from their son.
You know, these cases where, you know, you put your keys on the table, you go to get it and you can't find them. And then you look all over and then you come back and there they are where you were looking.
Yeah.
Do they play little games like that?
No, I mean, I think that with the apports, they are, I mean, I think in many ways, there's a sort of demonstration of what can be done from the spirit world. I mean, one of the most interesting experiments done at Skoll was done in front of the three scientists who were sitting around the table. And there were these lights that would appear in the room. They called them spirit lights, and they were little orbs that would be darting around the room. Often they'd go inside the bodies of the researchers, and they could feel them moving around inside of them, and then pop out the side of their bodies. These lights kind of illuminated the seance room sometimes, because they didn't use any light in there. In this particular experiment, one of the lights went inside a quartz crystal that was placed in a bowl on the table. The quartz crystal then lit up so they could see it. And they were communicating with spirit while this was going on. And they said the spirits would say, okay, pick up the quartz crystal. They would pick it up. It's solid, perfectly normal. Put it back down on the table. They say, okay, pick it up again now. And they pick it up, and their hand just, they could see the crystal, but their hands passed through it. So it was like a sort of hologram. It was like a sort of image of the crystal, but it wasn't physically there. Then they'd be asked to pick it up for a third time, and it was solid again. It had rematerialized. And this just blew the scientists away, as you can imagine. You know, things like this do not happen. And Arthur Ellison, who up to that point had not been skeptical, but he had been searching all his life for sort of, you know, irrefutable paranormal information, knowledge. And here was an experiment. Here was a demonstration to him that he could not possibly find any way that this had been hoaxed. And it just blew him away completely.
Okay, back to the phones we go now. Vicky in St. Louis. It's got to be you, Vicky. How are you?
Good. Hi, George. I'm good. It's me.
Yeah, it is. Vicky has been calling my show since 1997.
Every time I call, I still get nervous.
Don't worry.
I have a story.
All right, go ahead.
My dad was a real skeptic about life after death, and I was always trying to convince him because I'm not a skeptic at all. I know that there is another side. And when my dad passed away last November, it was right before Christmas, mm-hmm. and I was coming home that night in a car, riding with the driver, and turned on the Christmas music, and Frosty the Snowman came on, and I could see my dad just appear in my mind, like watching a movie. He started dancing to Frosty the Snowman. He had that black derby on and the pants, like, and a white T-shirt. He was dancing like Fred Astaire, and the sparks were coming out of his feet when he turned and everything. And it was just such a gift that, you know, I couldn't even reproduce it in my mind now. It was like watching a film, and, you know, and it was like a gift that he told me, Vicky, I'm all right, and, you know, and I'm happy. And it was really neat.
That seems to be, as I mentioned earlier, the sort of main function of these communications, isn't it? You get a lot with EVP. It's to let the living know that the dead continue in some other dimension, and that's extraordinarily reassuring. I'm sure you got a hell of a lot of reassurance out of that.
Tim, you had James Webster, who is an experienced magician from Britain.
Yeah.
You had him attend some of these sessions. What was his take?
Okay, so he, I mean, I didn't hear what your previous guest said, and I presume he was talking about all the tricks that can be done. And
right. The previous guest primarily was going after professional psychics who he claims are bilking people, right, and that they're not real. So that was his approach.
Okay, well, I would totally
He would like to
point.
Believe, and he's looking for proof that everything else exists. He says he hasn't found it.
Well, he should check out. I bet he hasn't checked out the Skoll experiment. But
well, he said he duplicated it with magic.
Oh, he duplicated it,
yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I'd like to speak to him anyway. I mean, that's an interesting claim, because if that's true and he's managed to do it under the circumstances that were occurring at the time, I'd be interested in it.
Well, what did Webster say?
Webster was saying, I can't duplicate it. You know, given that there's only four people sitting in the room, how could they, you know, he had experienced these lights, which, and so did, you know, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, who you probably know.
I know.
Very
him.
Famous
yes.
guy.
Good man.
Was attending the skull sessions. He described these objects buzzing around and going through a solid table. Now, little packets of light can't go through solid objects and pop out the other side, as well as entering the body. This happened to the researchers. Now, I don't know how you duplicate that, you know? And when you can feel these things moving around inside of you, how do you duplicate that?
You can't, can you?
No. So I don't believe when he says he can duplicate what occurred at Skull, I don't believe that at all.
Okay, let's take final calls. We'll go next to Glenda in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Glenda.
Hi, George. I'm so grateful that you took my call.
Glad you got through.
I'm grateful that you're bringing this out into the open, because I recently had an experience that could not be duplicated in any way. I went into a center. Actually, my father died just a short while ago, and I was having problems sleeping. So I went into a health center that provided ways to relax and learn how to be able to fall asleep. And the one woman that was a student there interrupted, and she said, I'm sorry, but I've got someone here that wants to talk to you. It was the most amazing thing. She said, he's in navy dungarees, and he's reaching in his pocket. He's pulling out a photograph, and he's pointing to the little girl. And she would have never known that my father was in the Navy, and when he went overseas, he carried a picture of us with him. And she said he wants to tell you that he can help physically steer the wheel of the car or prevent something from happening, but he can't help us make our choices.
Hmm. Interesting.
And it was so amazing. She's actually from Dublin, and she wasn't there for any pretense or any way of me knowing that she was a psychic, and there's no way she would have known that my father had this information to give me or what he looked like. And she described several other things that I've never told anyone. As a matter of fact, one of them was that in one of our many moves in the Navy, my toys were lost, and she thought that it would help if I knew that my father said he tried to recover the toys, and that he couldn't duplicate the dolls that he bought overseas for me, and he wanted me to know that he was sorry about that. And it's something that happened so many years ago, and no one could have ever known these pieces of information. So if there's any skeptic who could ever think that this isn't a possibility, that for me is evidence.
Well, you see, I come across, Tim, with my thoughts that there's got to be something on the other side. It's got to be there, that there's just too much to this universe. It's too overwhelming. It's too complex to even think otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I certainly had that experience when I was quite young. I came across a dead animal in the woods. You know, I was maybe about 10. And I sort of, the first time I really looked at a dead animal, and I thought, this is really bizarre. You know, is that what happens to you when you, you know, that,
yeah.
Is that all there is? You know, we end up as dead meat. And I was just struck by that, and really, you know, from that sort of point on, I've always had that sort of feeling that this simply cannot be truth, that we are just, you know, we live in a material world, and a scientific empirical point of view that, you know, when the brain dies, that's it, it's all over. Well, instinctively I didn't believe it as a child, and now having looked at it in great detail and researching it for sort of 10 years or so, you know, I find a copious amount of evidence that contradicts that point of view.
Let's go to Los Angeles. Christian's been on hold for a while. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. George, it's good to talk to you. I'll try to make myself brief.
Okay.
I think there is life after death, and the reason I can say that is that when my mother passed away when I was a little teenager, in 1989. Her death was so sudden and shocking, especially to me. Her spirit actually came back from the other side to comfort me. I was at a friend's house at the time, to pretty much comfort me and tell me that everything was going to be okay. And that's, for me, that was my kind of solid, you know, foundation that there is life after death. But I had actually had two questions for you real quick.
Yeah,
and of course, also, you know, Bill Guggenheim, you've had on your show, has also talked about from the other side. And he wrote a book called Hello from Heaven.
That's right.
Question I have is, we had a horrendous accident within the last 24 hours here in L.A. in the Valley, where apparently a truck crashed into a fire hydrant. You may have heard of this on the news. And two bystanders who saw this went running out to see if the guy was okay in the car. The thing is that when he crashed into the fire hydrant, he also knocked over a street lamp, which exposed the wires.
And they got electrocuted.
And they were electrocuted.
Yeah.
The question I have, and of course, you know, they're two heroes now. The question I have is, one, you mentioned phony TV shows. I watch Ghost Adventures all the time. I've been watching it for years, and it seems very convincing what they do. So how do you feel about Ghost Adventures? And also, what happens to your spirit when you die a sudden death, like what happened in the Valley recently? You know, when you don't expect it, like a quick sudden death, or like if you get hit by a car. Is there, let's say, some spiritual entity to help you cross over to the other side? And I'll take my question off the air, and thank you very much for your time, guys.
Okay, sure thing. Tim, what happens?
When we die suddenly.
Yep.
I think it really depends on who you are and how sort of much you've kind of developed yourself, your consciousness. I mean, as far as I can tell, everything survives death except the physical body. So we're talking about personalities, we're talking about memories. Even when the skull group, the communicators came through, they even had their regional accents when they were speaking through the mediums. They were completely the person they were when alive. So that in itself is astonishing. I think when people die suddenly, there's a lot of confusion because they're suddenly lost their body and they're suddenly, you know, having a sort of like they're an out-of-body experience. They can sort of float over the situation and see what the situation is. And often they don't believe that they're dead. There's a lot of problems with that. I've spoken to a number of researchers who've looked into that. And there's a lot of confusion initially when people die. I mean, my mother passed recently. She had no belief in life after death, despite the fact that I kept on badgering her into sort of, you know, giving her the information. She wouldn't have any of it. She remained a firm skeptic. And I often wonder, you know, what happened to her, you know. So I'm fairly sure that she would have ended up in another dimension, you know, instantly, and being quite bewildered because she didn't know where she was.
No, not at all. And then, of course, we know your answer about some of these TV shows.
We do indeed. I don't have much time for them, you know. It's disinformation. It's putting out sort of, you know, the usual rubbish that people can be entertained by. But it doesn't tell you anything about the substance of the matter. You know, it makes people even more skeptical of the subject, which is already difficult enough.
You know, they're trying to make them into these reality shows rather than a solid documentary like you've done, where, you know, they have to have results every week, you know. I mean, who's exactly going to watch them if they say, well, we went to this old penitentiary and nothing happened?
Exactly. That's a very good point. You know, and so, yeah, I mean, it just doesn't work like that. You know, okay, at the skull experiment, there was stuff happening every time they sat down. But it took them a year to do that. You know, they had to sit in that room and absolutely nothing happened for virtually a year. But they were very persistent. And eventually sort of phenomena began to occur very slowly, and then it snowballed. And it was so frequent that they were able to invite these scientists in who were then able to sit with them for 2 years and witness what happened. You know? But that's very rare.
It sure is. Let's go to Kathy in Oakland, California. Hi, Kath. We got a moment here for you.
Yes, thank you, George. Yes, Tim, in answer to your story about your mom.
Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Anyway, I came across a book by Mary Ann Winkowski.
Oh, yeah, we know her well.
Yes, When Ghosts Speak. And, Tim, are you familiar with Mary Ann? And also a question, Tim, talk about the ET that came through the school session.
Okay.
Minute to go, Timmy.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the book.
She's a great guest. She's a ghost chaser.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll check that out. The ET that came through, that was totally remarkable. First of all, the face appeared on video. When they run the video actually in darkness, and then when they play the tape back later, this extraordinary ET face came through, two different types of ET face, and they look very much like Grays. And as Robin said, actually one actually materialized in front of them physically in the skull hole.
Tim, if people want to get your DVD or look at Afterlife Investigations, where do they find it?
They find it on my website, which is theafterlifeinvestigations.com. You can buy the DVD there at a specially reduced price for Coast to Coast listeners.
Super. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate you being on the program.
You're welcome.
Tim Coleman, director, producer, also worked with our buddy James Fox on that UFO-related documentary, Out of the Blue. For David Pujinski, Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.